When bombs first started dropping on Libya, President Obama was in Brazil on a trade mission. He took time out from talking to business executives to announce that military action had begun.
Make no mistake, today we are part of a broad coalition. We are answering the calls of a threatened people, and we are acting in the interests of the United States and the world.
Tonight, the president will expand on that message with a speech at the National Defense University here in Washington, D.C. He'll try to explain why it's in the United States' interest to intervene in Libya, and he'll stress the limits of that involvement. As NPR's Scott Horsley reports, these are ideas the president touched on in his Nobel Peace Prize speech more than a year ago.
President Obama could hardly have imagined back in December of 2009 the dramatic changes sweeping over the Arab world this spring. But even as he accepted his Nobel Peace Prize, Mr. Obama warned that keeping the peace sometimes requires the force of arms.
More and more, we all confront difficult questions about how to prevent the slaughter of civilians by their own government, or to stop a civil war whose violence and suffering can engulf an entire region.
Libya is an early test of how the president answers those questions. He says part of his calculation was the possibility that violence in Libya could spread to a wider region. Defense Secretary Robert Gates told ABC this weekend, while Libya itself might not be a vital national interest to the U.S., the prospects of turmoil spilling beyond its borders is worrisome.
You had a potentially significantly destabilizing event taking place in Libya that put at risk, potentially, the revolutions in both Tunisia and Egypt, and that was another consideration I think we took into account.
In his Nobel Prize speech, Mr. Obama telegraphed a second consideration for when to use force, when there's international cooperation.
America's commitment to global security will never waver, but in a world in which threats are more diffuse and missions more complex, America cannot act alone.
In Libya, America is not acting alone. In fact, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton suggested on ABC this weekend the U.S. military might not have acted at all had it not been for the encouragement of the French, the British, and members of the Arab League.
We are supporting a mission through NATO that was very much initiated by European requests joined by Arab requests. I think this is a watershed moment in international decision-making.
President Obama argues that broad coalition adds legitimacy to the fight against Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi and also helps to limit the price tag.
This is precisely how the international community should work, as more nations bear both the responsibility and the cost of enforcing international law.
And despite some squabbling, NATO will take over command of the operation within the president's timetable of days, not weeks. There is a cost to running a war by committee, though. It's likely contributed to some of the confusion over U.S. goals in Libya. President Obama has called for Gaddafi's ouster, but the military mission, authorized by the U.N. Security Council, extends only so far as protecting civilians. Mr. Obama insists there are other non-military ways to put pressure on Gaddafi and those around him, including international sanctions and threats of war crimes prosecution. That's a third point Mr. Obama made in his Oslo speech. It's not enough to merely condemn tyrants. You have to be willing to back that up.
The words of the international community must mean something. Those regimes that break the rules must be held accountable.
The president repeated that idea 10 days ago on the eve of the first missile strike, saying if Gaddafi were allowed to carry out his threats, the words of the international community would be rendered hollow. The international community acted to stop Gaddafi, and tonight Mr. Obama will use his own words in an effort to persuade the American people it's worth it. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.